Hello and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with what appears to be a cynical move by President Trump, disguised as an act of compassion in reversing his policy of separating children from their parents at the southern border. The former commissioner of the United States Immigration and Naturalization Service under President Clinton, Doris Meisner, joins us to discuss how Trump's executive order is designed to do away with the consent decree known as the Flores Agreement, which Doris signed in 1997, that protects immigrant children in federal detention, placing them in the least restrictive conditions for no more than 20 days, with guarantees of food, water, medical treatment in facilities subject to inspection. Working on two tracks through the courts to undo the Flores Agreement and via the Republican bills in the House, which Trump has loaded up with money for his wall, it is unclear whether Trump will have the children join their parents in jails or the parents join their children in detention. But what is emerging is a grim prospect of indefinite detention for these families and a mendacious raid on the Treasury for politically connected contractors to build prisons and detention facilities for growing numbers escaping violence in Central America, who could instead be given ankle monitors and be housed with relatives pending their appearance in immigration court. Then we'll examine our immigration prison system, about to be gifted with a bonanza of pork barrel by Trump, and speak with Christina Fialo, the co-founder and co-executive director of Freedom for Immigrants, a nonprofit advocacy group seeking to abolish immigration detention. She joins us to discuss her article at the Los Angeles Times, "Don't Stop with Family Separation, End the Whole Immigration Prison System," and describe conditions inside the existing facilities that are about to be overrun with more detainees held for indefinite periods. Then finally, we'll look into plans by the Trump administration to merge the Department of Labor with the Department of Education and speak with Seth Harris, a distinguished scholar at Cornell University School of Industrial and Labor Relations, who served for 4 years as Deputy U.S. Secretary of Labor and 6 months as Acting U.S. Secretary of Labor. We will discuss what Seth describes as a solution in search of a problem and Minority Chair of the Senate Education Committee, Senator Patrick Murray's response that Mick Mulvaney's plan is unrealistic, unhelpful, and futile. And joining us now is Doris Meisner, the former commissioner of the United States Immigration and Naturalization Service under President Bill Clinton, who's now a senior fellow at the Migration Policy Institute, where she directs the Institute's U.S. immigration policy work. Welcome to Background Briefing, Doris Meisner.
Thank you. I'm pleased to be with you.
Well, thank you, Doris. And it looks as though President Trump reversing himself on taking children away from their parents on the southern border in his executive order is going to butt up against the Flores settlement, which was a consent decree agreed to by the Clinton administration and the ACLU and other plaintiffs in litigation in 1997. And it's known as the Flores Settlement, which sets standards for unaccompanied minors who were in the custody of federal authorities. Were you the INS commissioner at the time?
Yes, yes. I signed the settlement, and it's a consent decree, and it's had the force of law ever since.
So I guess the issue now is, and the confusion that many have, and I certainly have, is what's going to happen now? Will the children join their parents in jail, or will the parents join their children in detention?
Well, we don't know, but if I were to take a guess, it would be that the children will join their parents in detention.
And that is basically much a harsher form of detention than the current detention that children are in now, right?
Well, you know, this would be prospective, and so presumably starting today. And so it would mean that the government would be putting people into facilities that are presumably appropriate, and there certainly has been what's called family detention in the past. They would be needing to expand that family detention since that is the predominant characteristic of the flow of these of the people that are now coming across the border that will be detained. So, and I think that they recognize that they would not be able to be having children and adults in what is classically criminal detention. But it is also true that if they are going to be prosecuting the adults, which is what triggers all of this, that those people then are in the hands of the Marshal Service and the Justice Department and need to go before a federal district court judge. And that's all, you know, criminal detention. So I think that the announcement that we saw today, which is that the Border Patrol will not be referring people right now for prosecution. The Justice Department has said that, of course, as soon as they get the referrals, they'll prosecute. But I think that that not referring for a while is the time of reconnoitering that is now taking place within the agencies themselves, having to decide how they are going to actually implement this order, because they don't have enough family detention space. They need to have appropriate family detention space, and they have to figure out very quickly how to pull that together. But at the same time, even though this has been, as you described it, you know, the implication is that this has been a setback for the president in that he had to back down on his earlier statements. Certainly that's true, and it's certainly true as a political take on it. But really, they have achieved with this action pretty much what they've wanted, which is the possibility of long-term detention for people crossing the border, even though they're parents and children, much narrowed standards for asylum so that far fewer people would actually be eligible for asylum, and then the opportunity to challenge this Flores decision, because under the Flores decision, they are not permitted to keep children in any kind of detention for more than 20 days, and they're required to keep children in the least restrictive setting. That had been extended more recently to include family groups, and so they now have the opportunity to go back to court and challenge that, and they have been wanting to be out from under the constraints of that decision. They'll now have a chance to do so, even if the district court that originally ruled to uphold these limitations continues to uphold them. They can appeal through the rest of, you know, up to the circuit court and the Supreme Court, and they're looking for a chance to get out from under those constraints.
So are you saying that basically we here in the press have been somewhat hoodwinked or distracted, that this is a rather cynical move? And I must say that, you know, having the First Lady down on the border today, that puts a human face on a pretty inhuman program. I wonder whether that's also being orchestrated. But just in general, the idea that the president in his executive order could actually make things even worse for those being detained, detain them indefinitely, and rip up the constraints of the Flores Agreement, which says that children kept in federal custody have to be placed in the least restrictive conditions possible and provided with some basic necessities like food and water, access to medical treatment, access to running water, and they must be separated from adults with whom they have no relationship. And that doesn't sound like where we're heading, does it?
Well, as I say, they're going to go to court on this, that they are right now bound by those restrictions, but they have been very opposed to those restrictions. They have characterized the results of those restrictions as catch and release. President campaigned strongly against catch and release, as they called it, during the campaign, and they have been very critical of it ever since. And it is certainly true that these court decisions, Flores, and the follow-up that then requires that the same conditions be applied to mothers, family units, that limits them, very much in being able to detain people, because they take the view that if you can't detain people, then they are not going to show up for their immigration court hearing that can then result in an order of deportation if they have an asylum case that is denied. So this, as I say, we have no idea what the court will decide, and it definitely takes time to appeal cases if the judge upholds the current opinion, but it puts it back into play in a way that they, the only other way that they have been able to approach this issue of the constraints is to ask Congress to pass legislation, because they characterize this Flores decision and the limited detention requirements, they characterize that as a loophole. That's one of the things that they've called a loophole. And so they've said, we're bound by these loopholes. It's the fault of Congress needs to fix this. Congress needs to pass legislation to fix it. The other way, of course, and we know that Congress hasn't been able to do that. And we see again today that the legislation has been postponed because they can't find agreement on legislation to send forward. Now, the legislation that they're talking about has enormous amounts of other provisions in it, but that's what the president has been beseeching the Congress to do. Now he has an opportunity to do that in court, and they have been looking for any way that they can to undo those limitations.
Well, in terms of the Congress not being able to make a deal, and of course the Senate has made it pretty clear that they're pretty skeptical of anything that comes out of the House, Trump is using the border wall, is he not, as leverage here? And he's using the border wall funding as leverage over DACA and the Dreamers. But that's separate, I guess, from what they're trying
right.
to undo.
But this family separation issue got right. tied up in that. I mean, that wasn't right. the original intent, but it got tied up in it quite quickly.
Right. So in terms of going through the courts, is it possible, though, that short of, and you say it could take some time, that in the meantime, could President Trump, which is frankly what it appears to be happening, could he do to the Flores Agreement what he's essentially been doing to the Affordable Care Act, which is chipping away with it, at it through sort of policy neglect, if you will, and neglect via implementation? In other words, are there bureaucratic tricks up his sleeve? For example, one of the provisions of the Flores Agreement is that all these facilities have to be inspected. And we don't even know where a lot of these facilities are. So it looks as though, in terms of inspections, we're way behind in that, if indeed these inspections are going on.
Well, we have to remember that there has been a very elaborate system in place for many years for placement of unaccompanied minors and other family kinds of cases. So this would not be the first time that there is family detention and all of the organizational, you know, mechanisms that are required to make it work. So that the different places around the country that we've heard already have been receiving children from the time when the family separation just began about a week ago, and actually even before the Attorney General's announcement about zero tolerance, their families were being separated. So young children were being sent, all children under the age of 18, but now particularly young ones, to different parts of the country. And we've seen reports of groups in New York, and there are some in Michigan, and I think some in Seattle and so forth, because the Department of Health and Human Services has the responsibility under a statute to take care of these children and place them in with a relative or with a parent or in the care of a foster situation. So all of that is in place. And the inspections that are required and the standards that are required, the contracts, they're all in place. The thing that is different now is that suddenly there has to be a really significant ramp up of that. And that takes a little time to do. And I'm sure that there are plenty of very skilled, effective people in the government that are nonetheless really, really having a difficult time trying to do their jobs because of the ramp up that is now called for.
Well, presumably there are people in the DHS and ICE and Border Patrol, etc., that are compassionate, and those that are a little cold-hearted. I mean, one, of course, was recorded on tape amid a bunch of wailing children, more or less saying, you know, this is an orchestra, you know, where's the conductor, which is pretty much a horrible notion put forth by people like Ann Coulter, who say that these children are being coached by a bunch of liberals to tug at our heartstrings, which seems a really callous rendering of what's really going on. So what would your take on that be, Doris Marger, in terms of how people are handling it within the government? Is it just a kind of reflects how the country itself is divided, for example?
Well, I don't know that we have any way of knowing that. What I do know is that the mission for which these people are trained and the work that they are there to do is very different from the tasks that they're now being given. And these decisions have been made without any advance planning. Just take the statements that were made a few weeks ago that people should no longer, if they want to claim asylum, come between the ports of entry, where what we're really trying to stop is illegal crossing of the border. If people do have a claim of asylum, they should come to a port of entry. Well, that was simply something that was said. Ports of entry, that may even be could certainly be a sensible way of doing things, but not if you don't have the capacity at ports of entry, if you haven't staffed up for it, if you don't have people that are trained to deal with these kinds of cases, if you don't have, if you're interrupting, you know, other traffic that's going back and forth, so that then we've seen different practices at different ports of entry all across the border because of these different infrastructure needs. And so, whatever one might say or not say about the people who work for the government, what their own views would be, that's not really germane. What's relevant here is the jobs that they are trained to do, the wherewithal that they have to do it, and the kind of a real operational crisis that is created when instructions just change on a whim without any planning to be able to carry them out effectively.
Well, what we know so far, you know, and as I say, very little press access has been given to these facilities, and obviously there are good reasons to protect the children and not show their faces, etc. But on the other hand, there's obviously a tremendous public outcry and outrage, and so people want to know what's going on inside these facilities. The press were allowed into the converted Walmart down in McAllen, Texas, run by a nonprofit called Southwest Key. And I talked to some of the reporters who went on that press tour. But now we're learning that the head of that organization is being paid $1.5 million this year, which is, in terms of nonprofits, that's considered way above what would be a reasonable salary. So is there a possibility that we're going to have a kind of, if you're saying that these families can be held in detentions for a long time, does that mean that this will be a kind of gold rush, if you will, for contractors, because the Defense Department's also being tasked with building tent cities? So what's your expectation there in terms of whether or not there's going to be an awful lot of money made out of this misery?
I'm sure that we can expect that there will be a good deal of that. This has all the potential for that kind of misuse. And, I mean, there certainly are some contractors and some contract facilities that are operating as they should, but there's a lot of room for abuse, particularly for abusive practices and for improper, as you say, salaries and so forth, and particularly when things have to be scaled up so quickly. So, similarly with what we've seen, the trends over decades now at the state level as well as at the federal level with private prisons, as compared to prisons and jails being the responsibility of public institutions, governments, and therefore accountable in ways to elected officials and to publics that are much less likely when things are operating under contract. I think this certainly has the potential for that kind of abuse and scandal and ultimately, you know, incredible amounts of exploitation of the people themselves and the taxpayer. I mean, I'll just give you one, you know, very important number. One does not have to keep people in detention in order for them to appear at their hearings. The reason for immigration detention is supposed to be sure that people come to their hearings before an immigration judge. And now, this zero tolerance is a different thing because they're trying to prosecute people criminally in federal courts. But in general, traditionally, immigration detention has been so people show up at their hearings. Well, you don't have to detain people. You can put ankle bracelets on them. You can have monitoring. There has been for many years, a very successful case management project that ICE ran that people checked in daily or had people that, you know, monitor their cases. 99% of them showed up for their hearings. It can be done. And if you do it that way, you're basically spending about $35 a day for a family. If you have a family in detention with in the way that is now being envisioned, you're going to be spending at a minimum $300 a day for the family. So we're talking about potential expenditures of millions of dollars to the taxpayer when there are other practices that are more humane, can be effective in people being in hearings, and also affordable.
Well, just in closing, Donald Trump obviously wants to appear tough, and he's made that clear. At the end of the day, though, no matter how tough and he and Sessions and Stephen Miller, who's apparently whispering in Trump's ear, no matter how tough they get, it's never going to be solved, is it? Because Jay Johnson, the former head of DHS, I saw him on television last night, making the point that, look, at the end of the day, unless conditions improve for people in El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras, and that they can have live their lives without being so terrified that they have to move their kids to safety in the United States, unless you solve the problems at its source, it's never going to go away. What's your take on that?
No, that's absolutely right. I mean, we have to be involved. This is our region. This is our neighborhood geographically. We have to be involved in ways that address those conditions in those countries. It's in our national. It's in our self-interest to do so. Now, that doesn't mean that we shouldn't be enforcing our borders. Of course, we should be enforcing our borders. You know, this so much of what's going on now in the way that the rhetoric flies on this issue is, well, if you're not for this, then you're for open. If you're not for this kind of detention, then you're for open borders. That's ridiculous. Border security is, of course, important, and it's legitimate, and we have very good ways of doing it. But we now have different flows, and we need different responses for those different flows, and they are immediate responses, but they also have to be longer-term responses, such as what Secretary Johnson describes.
Well, Doris Meisner, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thank you.
And again, I've been speaking with Doris Meisner, who's the former commissioner of the United States Immigration and Naturalization Service under President Bill Clinton, and she's now a senior fellow at the Migration Policy Institute, where she directs the Institute's U.S. immigration policy work. We're going to take a brief station break. We're back with an examination of our immigration prison system about to be gifted with a bonanza of pork barrel by Trump.